and welcome to Coven.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Riley.
And we're curating our dream Coven lineup.
Episode 2, week 2. Let's go. Let's start off with our magical moment. This is just a magical, intentional, special thing that we experienced sometime during the last week. We want to hear from you, our listeners. Send us in your magic moments to covenpod333@gmail.com and we'll read them on the air.
Yes.
So, Jenna, please, do you want to go first?
Okay, yeah, I guess I'll go first.
Tell me.
Okay, so, you know, I am planning on moving out of Tennessee.
She is.
And it's been very, like, bittersweet. I've been there for almost, well, like, 8.5 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a really long time. Yeah. So I was randomly driving by the Tennessee State Museum or Tennessee State Archives Museum or something. The new one? Yeah, mm-hmm. Newish. And on the side, it has, like, all of Tennessee's state things. Mm-hmm. And I happened to see the Tennessee State rock was agate.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember being like,
as if I knew that. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Tennessee State rock.
Of course it is.
Yeah. It's also funny. Tennessee State drink is milk.
I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah. Anyway, so I saw that and I thought it was interesting because I was like, okay, crystal. Mm-hmm. And then I was in LA recently and I went into a crystal store and I was doing this thing where I was like, I'm just going to close my eyes and put my hands mm-hmm. over the rocks in whichever one feels right. And ended up feeling a lot of heat from this one and it ended up being agate. Aww. And it was right when I was feeling super like sad about leaving Tennessee. So I got it and it felt like intentional, like a little piece of Tennessee.
Yeah, I love that. That's sweet.
That's my magic moment.
Did you look up like what agate, like the...
No.
Like the properties and stuff?
I like have known at some point.
Yeah.
I don't remember though.
Okay. Well.
I feel like it's like grounding maybe.
Okay. That'd be interesting too.
Yeah.
No.
What about you?
Mine's like maybe slightly heavy, maybe slightly a little bit of an overshare potentially.
We love overshares. This podcast is about overshares.
Yes. A few nights ago, my partner's brother had like a really crazy kind of like ghost experience. And I don't want to get into all of that, but it's like semi, you need to know that for the rest of the story. But so we were just like both my partner and I like going to bed that night after hearing about that experience. We're like both just like a little bit on edge and like we both woke up at like 3 a.m., which is witching hour, like anxious. And like once I finally fell back asleep though, I had like it wasn't like necessarily like a heavy, bad, scary anxiety. I was just like, okay, I feel a little weird and I'm awake at 3 a.m. So that's always a little bit of a sign. But anyway, so I fell back asleep and I ended up having like a really sweet dream about my great grandma who passed away when I was a senior in high school and we were really, really close. She like helped raise me. Wow. Like, and I also like didn't see her for like the last year of her life. And that's always felt like heavy and bad to me. And anyway, so I had this dream. We were in like a beautiful, she was also like church lady, like pastor's wife, all that. But we were in a, like a beautiful, huge, like pearlescent, like pink and white church. And it was Christmas time. And she was like so happy. It was like a Christmas service or something. And she was just like so happy. And we just like, I don't know. I just like sat next to her and we were just like talking. I don't even remember about what. And just like hugging each other and crying. And it was just like, there was just like so much joy, like on her face and in her voice and like her presence. And it was just really sweet. She also, her last few years of life had dementia and was just obviously always confused and angry and upset. So it was just really sweet to have like a very warm and welcome experience with her in that way. So
and that was my magical moment. The anxiety too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like really, very comforting. Mm-hmm. That's so special. Yeah. I love that. That's crazy that your great grandma was alive when you were a senior in high school.
Yeah, she lived to be 92, I think.
That's wild.
My great grandma, my dad's grandma, is still alive. She's,
oh my goodness.
She's also like 93 or 94.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I guess you are like the oldest in your family, like mm-hmm. of the kids.
Yeah.
I'm on the youngest side of my extended family. The only great grandparent I ever met was my mom's grandmother, and she passed when I was like 9.
Oh wow.
And I think she was like 95.
Oh wow.
But yeah, I'm like, there's like 30 cousins and I'm like on the younger side. So,
well, I think my oldest cousin is like 30 something, like early 30s. Oh. So, but everyone just got, I mean, I'm from a very Christian, from a very Christian evangelical background.
And
everyone, well, yes, yeah, but everyone got married really young. Everyone had kids really young. Like my grandma was 17 when she got married.
Yeah, that's wild.
My parents had me when they were like 22.
Yeah.
So,
but special that you got to have that relationship with
yes,
her.
Yes, definitely was. So it was great to see my Nana. Thank you, Nana. Love you, Nana.
Thank you, Nana.
Okay.
Should we get into
it? Let's get started.
I don't know who Riley researched this week.
Oh, yes. Okay. So this is a part of the show where we go over the birth chart of the person that I'm covering this week, but Jenna doesn't know who that is. So I'm just showing her the chart. I'll tell her the placements, and then she's going to make observations about who she thinks this person might be. Not necessarily like who exactly they are, but the kind of person that they that they were, maybe the kind of life that they lived, things that they encountered.
And if I happen to know the person in history and think I can guess, I might. But yeah, I don't think that's going to happen often where I guess the exact person. No. But I love dissecting the birth chart.
We're trying to do not very well-known people in general. Sharing secret stories and stuff.
Yeah, let's hear it. Can I look at it while you
describe
it?
Yeah, I'll give you this. There's no information about the birth date or the birth year. And I will say with this person, too, this is not an exact... This is an estimated birth date.
Okay.
Exact year. So at least we know that those, like, the outer planets are correct. But this person, there's, like, some autobiographies from closer to the time that she lived that say that her birth date was... what is it? September 16th. But we don't know that for sure, for sure. But September 16th. So her sun is in Virgo. Her moon is in Aquarius. Her rising is also Virgo. I don't know all the squares and the, and all the conjunct, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I'm just reading this out as a list. Her Mercury is in Libra. Her Venus is also in Virgo. Lots of Virgo. Her Mars is in Scorpio, which... Wow, actually, thinking about later things, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. Jupiter in Taurus, Saturn in Libra, Uranus in Taurus, Neptune in Leo, Pluto in Aries, North Node in Capricorn, which, that's interesting. Chiron in Aries, Midheaven in Gemini. So,
very interesting.
Tell me what you think.
Okay, so yeah, obviously the first thing that stands out is the stellium, the Virgo stellium. Stellium is just when there's three or more planets in the same sign in someone's birth chart. Mm-hmm. And it's all like very personal, like very, very prominent. It's like a prominent stellium. It's not like, Pluto's prominent, but it's all personal planets. It's the rising Venus and sun in her first house. So that's like Virgo is very strong in this person's chart. Which means Mercury is very strong.
Which hers is in Libra.
And her Mercury's in Libra, So what rules over Virgo is in Libra in her chart. And it's right next to her Saturn, which is directly opposite her Pluto. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay, you know what I found, just side note, with... These other people that we're researching, they all have some strong aspect with Pluto, too.
Interesting.
And that's a really interesting thing to note with, like, witchy or, like, very spiritually driven people.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that makes sense. Somebody who feels like they have a greater purpose or, like, there's, like, this added layer of intensity and, like, mystery with them.
That's really cool.
All of the ones I've looked at, that we've done so far... And that I've researched have like some strong Pluto aspect.
That's really cool.
So that tells me her like feeling of like greater purpose and like mystery revolves around something to do with God. I mean,
sorry for all the background noise. I live in New York. True. Anyway.
something to do. That's Saturn and Mercury together. It's like there's a block around her communication and relationships and like love. Okay. But it's in her second house, so it's also in like home building, like healthy, safe partnerships, like finding security with others. Is something that's kind of hard for her, or finding a sense of like,
yeah, I would say that that
purpose or belonging with people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Virgo thing, obviously that's like healer, massive healer vibes. Mm-hmm. Anytime there's a Virgo rising in general, I feel like they're huge healer, partly because their seventh house is Pisces, partly because their 10th house is Gemini. So they just like instinctively understand people really well. Virgo is very intuitive with the body and with the earth and with how to serve others. Her sun and Venus pretty much conjunct. It's someone who's beautiful and in her first house, just like a magnet, basically. Other people are very, very drawn to her. And yeah, Scorpio Mars. Anytime somebody has a Scorpio Mars, they are seething with sexual energy.
Interesting.
Like, yeah,
actually,
I have.
Okay. Very interesting.
Yeah. Anytime somebody's a Scorpio Mars, I mean, and it's different depending on where it is, like what house it's in. But anytime someone has a Scorpio Mars, they are like, they just carry this like sexual energy that again makes them magnetic. But like my friends who have Scorpio Mars are like always, they can like turn it on. Like they have this like look. And, like, everybody wants to have sex with them, basically. it's really interesting.
I don't know that she was getting all that, but
well, even if she wasn't getting it, it could have been that, like, that was just, like, an energy she carried that people were really, like, drawn to her for. And just also, again, more intensity. Like, this seems like someone who's pretty intense. Aquarius moon, every time, let's see, Aquarius moon, I feel like is oftentimes in charts of people who move around a lot as a kid or have a single mother or a lot of siblings. Just kind of a little more like unconventional upbringing, childhood, mother dynamic. Randomly, it's in a lot of people who come from military homes.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think that's it.
I'd say you're like 80% on with all of that.
What was I off about?
Well, just the way that some of the things manifest are different because of this person's lifestyle.
Interesting.
So you'll see. And then also there's another connection that once I tell you who this is, I'm going to make because I thought you were going to make it.
Yeah, but I didn't.
So, okay. Are we ready to get into
it? What is it? What did I miss? Is it her Chiron and Aries?
No, I don't know what the fuck that means.
Oh, I guess I didn't talk about North Node and Capricorn.
Oh, yeah. Tell me. Yeah. Tell me what you think about that. Because I honestly, I didn't like study this.
Yeah.
Because.
Well, I guess just that so just I'm seems like her.
Does that make sense for her?
Like her path to fulfilling her like life's calling and her like life's lesson would be through expressing herself and a creativity, but in a way that is like structured and in like business way. Okay, let's get into it.
Okay.
Tell me about this person. So, who is it?
Today I'm inviting psychic, herbalist, and composer Saint Hildegard of Bingen to join our coven.
I was gonna do her.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my god, I didn't think that you would know who this is.
I literally just added her to my list.
Well, take her off because she's mine. I have been obsessed with this woman for so long. She's mine.
I'm glad that.
Do you know what do you know about her?
I have not. I've barely started scratching the surface of my research with her. She was gonna be one of my later ones.
Okay. So oh my god, I'm so excited to do her. Like, the more that I dove into just who she is, and, like, I knew about the things that she was interested in and what she wrote about. I don't even remember, like, how I first came across her, but it was, like, at a time where I was beginning to kind of expand my own spiritual experience, and she is a Christian mystic. And so she just showed me, like, a lot about what spirituality could be outside of like the evangelical church that I grew up in.
She is so perfect for this.
Yes. And I'm like, and she's just, she's my girl. Like she's not an herbalist. Not me being
jealous.
I know. She's a good one. But okay. Yes.
Wait, that's so funny with the Scorpio Mars then. Miss Girl was freaky.
Okay. We're going to touch on
also,
that.
It's in her third house. So like low key, she would have been super into like dirty talk.
We are going to get into that. That is relevant, actually, even though she's a nun.
Yeah.
So, okay. St. Hildegard, my girl. Let me see. Yeah, so I have bought her writings. I've bought books about her. I'm just terrible about reading and I have no discipline, so I haven't actually read them. So it was fun to actually dive into her and
for
research
the first time.
Who she is and everything. But I've always felt like really connected to her. Okay. St. Hildegard of Bingen was a Benedictine nun in early 12th century Germany, and she was just recently canonized, so like added as a saint, that's the word for that, in 2012, which was like 4 or 5 years.
That's crazy.
I know. This is hilarious. This is like, that was like 4 or 5 years before I... before I would have like learned about who she was. So like, just very interesting that... That was like so recent. And I feel like she's had kind of a boom about interest about her since then too. So I read that she was supposed to be canonized in 1243 because Miss Girl was alive in, in the 1100s. But the paperwork for her canonization was lost en route to Rome. And they just,
convenient.
It was lost. And so they just like didn't get around to it, I guess. And it took them like 800 years to fix that. So, yeah. Anyway, I feel like it's super appropriate to include people on this podcast who are involved in a religious life, even though we're talking about like witchy people, especially like Catholics, because I feel like Catholicism is... No one put me on blast for this. I feel like Catholicism is just witchiness thinly veiled with like Christian language.
100%.
Yes.
Because
the rituals, their obsession with incense.
Yeah.
Like
100%.
It's all there.
Well,
the visuals,
a lot,
the language.
I feel like a lot of Christian churches, like Mormonism was literally founded by a folk magic practitioner.
Yeah.
Joseph Smith, if you didn't know.
It's the rituals for me. But yeah, so that's all there. And also for my own like comfort and understanding, I'm going to mostly refer to what she would call God as the divine instead, because that personally just that language makes more sense to me. And I know that that also would have made sense for her as well. And that allows me to just personally connect with her still in a way that doesn't come across or in a way that doesn't come with like the weight of my own personal
traumas.
Issues with the church. So anyway. Miss Hildegard. She was a writer, poet, composer, psychic, which in the church is referred to as a sibyl or a visionary mystic, meaning she would have visual premonitions from God or the divine. And her writings on herbal medicine and natural history were way, way, way ahead of her time. And I'll touch on all of that. And she's just one of four women recognized as a doctor of the church. And she is also the patron saint of musicians and writers.
Oh, shit.
Yes. And I just found this out in researching her, but she also, like, made up her own language for fun. So.
Okay. Yeah. Shakespeare?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I learn it? We should learn it and start speaking
in it. I know.
I kind
of, like, I'm like, what is this secret language and why did she use it? Okay. She started having visions as a child, but she hid her gift for a long time. It wasn't until her 40s that she actually, like...
Wow.
Yeah. That she actually... told someone about the things that she was seeing and the visions that she was having of divine figures and of the divine. She was given by her parents to the church when she was 8 years old. I was under the impression before I started looking into all of this that it was a choice of hers, because she was born into lower nobility and probably could have chosen to marry fairly well and live life that way.
No, she had a Scorpio Mars. She would not have picked the nun life.
Yeah, if it was exactly. Her choice. No, you're probably completely right. But she was actually the 10th born child in her family, and it was custom to tithe your 10th child to the church. Because it was like in medieval times.
The fact that 10 children was common enough for that to be a rule.
There was no birth control.
So. Yeah, you're right.
And it was also just like one less mouth to feed. Yeah. So they just give their children away when they're very young.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The first 30-ish years of her religious life was spent anonymously and quietly in a very strict and isolated convent in Western Germany. And she didn't receive any sort of recognition for her gifts, as I said earlier, until she was in her 40s. I believe she was 43 when she wrote to a prominent figure in the church about her visions. And he essentially, what?
I have a thought from that whenever this hurts. Okay.
He essentially approved for her to share her visions and her teachings to others. She became very well known, very well respected authority in the church, and provided insight and guidance through her visions to men in authority and kings. She was like an advisor to kings.
Yeah.
And other people.
And they all just like accepted her psychic abilities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
I guess whatever she wrote to.
Yeah, it was so accurate.
Man, I don't remember who, I don't care what his role was. I care about her. This is not about him.
Well, what I was going to say, yes. 43 is about the time you go through your Uranus opposition.
Okay.
When Uranus makes an opposition to the place that it was when you were born.
Okay.
And that is the time when so many people end up like publishing their life work or like doing the massive pivotal thing in their life that really shows what their like life's purpose is, if you will. Like the thing that changes things.
Exactly her.
Yeah.
Because from then on, it was just like a fast track to her becoming like an abbess, like ahead of her own content or the head of her own convent and all of that. And just doing all of this crazy, like all of these writings and teachings, not just about spirituality and the church and what they believe, but also about medicine, about natural history, about I'll get into all of it, but
what a baddie.
Yeah, no, seriously, she is a queen. Okay.
I'm just thinking about her birth chart more. Like, that's also interesting. Yeah. All the things that look like she's like truly a magnet. For people, it's like, people just like trust her and like believe what she's saying because she just seems.
That's how I took presence. What you said about that too. Yeah.
But then also Saturn conjunct her Mercury in Libra, having like the block with relationships and love, literally like being given to the church.
Yeah. Wow. And being a Scorpio Mars and not being able to connect with people.
Scorpio Mars in her third house likes dirty talk, but her Saturn's conjunct her Mercury ruling over communication. Oh, yeah. No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anyway, so about her visions, it's said that either after she would have the visions, she would be incapacitated for a time after and endured physical pain. But one theory also is that she suffered from severe migraines and having those auras is like within her migraine auras, that's when she would have visions.
Wow.
Yeah. Her just being like so incapacitated after having those kinds of visions too. Like that just totally makes sense to me. Like having such an intense like spiritual experience and then being like just
out of commission.
Yeah. For a time after. Definitely. She was for sure intensely cognizant of the mind, body, spirit connection. There was really no way for her to escape that awareness. And I'd say that's like a foundational belief, like a tenet of like witchiness and spirituality and
totally.
Stuff. So she just had a very witchy mindset.
It's crazy that she like kind of brought witchiness into the church like that. And it was like so readily accepted.
Yes. Yeah. By so many people but then at the same time, I feel like it was like accepted, but at the same time, not necessarily like as widespread because this is not an aspect, at least for me, like, and knowing what I know about like church history and stuff, like the things that she believes and the things that she wrote about as a woman and also just as a religious person who lived a religious life are like not the mainstream for a lot of people, I don't think. So speaking of which, we're gonna get into her her medical and yeah, her medical beliefs and her philosophies around that. So around 1150-ish, she founded her own convent in Bingen, where she lived out the rest of her very long life for a woman of medieval times. She lived to be 81.
Oh.
Yes. And I think maybe she owed that to her extensive knowledge of the body and medicine, found in her medical writings, Physica and Causae et Curae. Latin. I don't speak Latin. Nobody does. Her medical and scientific understanding is based on Hippocratic humorism and Greek cosmology, which also reads a bit like Ayurvedic, which I'll get into.
Well, in Greek cosmology, that's like Hellenistic astrology.
Yeah, exactly. So with her beliefs, like the combination of the humorism and the cosmology, with also just like her, the way that she talked about herbs and medicines and all of that, the way that it like reads a bit like Ayurvedic is really interesting, which I don't know. Do you know anything about Ayurveda?
A little.
Okay. So this is all, that's like your dosha is like your main energy that you have like in your body, and food and medicine and herbs and stuff all have different properties that balance out your doshas. Like you want your doshas to not like, you don't want like one predominant one, you want to achieve balance. Some sort of balance, but we all have like one dosha that is predominant naturally in our bodies, and humorism is very similar to that. So I see this as like a potential sign of her very strong intuition and understanding of the body, but also a sign of a connection to like the collective consciousness, because I don't think that she would necessarily have known about Ayurveda properties and practices like as a nun in the 1100s in Germany.
Right.
But we don't necessarily have any way of knowing like what exactly she was reading to come up with all of these things. Like it didn't just come out of thin air. She was reading and collecting her beliefs and stitching things together. But
totally. Maybe also like, I don't know, had a past life or something that was really strong.
I would definitely subscribe to that. Anyway, a brief overview of her medical philosophies. It's based around the four elements with their corresponding qualities and the four different humors in the body, as I said, the Hippocratic humorism. So that's fire, which corresponds to heat, and choler, which is yellow bile. It's like the humors. Yeah. Is it you?
Yeah.
There's air, which corresponds to dryness and blood. And there's water, which has the quality of moisture, and that's linked to phlegm. Mm. And there's earth, which corresponds with cold, and that's linked to melancholy, or what they knew as black bile. Well, I guess they knew it as melancholy, and they would also call it black bile, which isn't also necessarily a real thing, but humorism.
Interesting.
So the human condition is essentially diagnosed as one or two of the humors' predominance in the body. In Causae et Curae, she outlines natural remedies to balance the humors, which is the kind of Ayurvedic influence that I think that she had. Yeah. Which is how you heal, and become healthy as plants and even animals and stones, which she wrote about. Like she included, like not just herbs, but also like animals, trees, and stones. I'm assuming crystals and
like
stuff.
Like how the animals heal.
Yes,
or
because they have themselves. certain properties attributed to them that act as medicine and help to balance your humors in the same way that like Ayurveda says that you balance your doshas through eating certain things and drinking certain things.
So it would be like, if you're feeling this way, you should have a cat around you. Like the, that
I don't
kind
have
of thing?
That exact kind of quote from her, but like, I just, but like,
is that
probably
the, is that like what it was, or was it like you have to eat this type of animal? It wasn't just about like food.
I would assume maybe it's both.
Okay, like you could have like certain things around you, and that would help balance your like humors in some way.
Yeah, I feel like that would, so someone who's an expert in this stuff, please let me know if it's, if you have to eat a cat or if you can just have it
please
around you.
Please don't eat cats. Please don't do that. Okay. I like to think that my cats, I like to think that they bring a very like leveling, supportive energy. Like they help balance me.
Yeah. I think there's like studies about, I'm sure there's.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There are with their purring.
Yes, it's like a healing frequency. Yeah. I love that.
Literally, like,
that's literally kind of why I got cats, honestly.
Fair. Yeah. Valid.
To heal me.
I wonder what Hildegard thought of cats.
I wish I knew. She
definitely liked cats.
I bet she did. I feel like
there all had to have been nuns all around. Or nuns.
There were nuns all around. There definitely were.
There had to have been
cats. I feel like that's like a thing or like a stereotype, maybe. Is it that like just cats convents would just have like, cats running around? I feel like they wouldn't. Maybe they'd have like one dog, especially for like mice and stuff.
Yeah,
and
this was like the in my head, I middle see ages. Cats all over the convents.
I agree.
So,
cats all over the convents. True. Okay, back to the medicine. One example that I found of her writing, that's a direct quote from her. She says that tansy, which is an herb in like the rose family, is, quote, hot and a little damp and is good against all superfluous flowing humors, and whoever suffers from catarrh, which is mucus buildup in the nose and the throat, and has a cough. So basically when you have a cold, you should take tansy. She said, let him eat tansy. It will bind humors so that they do not overflow and thus will lessen.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I just love like anytime there's like where like medical overlaps with like spirit, it's just like, but in a way that's really, I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but I think you get it.
No, I get it. It's like, it's the mind, body, spirit connection.
Yeah. You the can't mind, break body, that. Spirit.
You have to be good in your body, good in your mind, and good in your spirit.
Yeah.
To be a healthy person. And she definitely completely understood that.
So like and using herbs and seeing how they actually literally improve the body and help the body, but also tying the spiritual side of it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's really fascinating.
Because it's honoring to God in her mind, honoring to the divine to be healthy to take care of yourself. Yeah, that's honoring, you know, the temple that you're given, if you will. So in addition to Hildegard's own treatises about what everything that she thought about medicine and herbs and the human body and nature, there are also many modern herbalist books based on her philosophies. So to name a couple, if you want some recommendations.
Please.
Hildegard of Bingen's Medicine by Dr. Vigard Strelo. And Gottfried Herzka, I'm so sorry, you guys, which is the book that I own and need to read. And now I feel extra inspired to finally get around to that. And another one is Hildegard of Bingen's Holistic Health Secrets, Natural Remedies from the Visionary Pioneer of Herbal Medicine by Melanie Schmidt-Ullman.
That's wild. So
those are your recommendations.
That's cool that we have access to that.
I know. And you can also literally read her own writings on all of this.
Wow.
Those are just kind of like modern texts that have like filtered it through modern medicine and like here's what you should take. Like here, like herbalist books.
How crazy that we have the work of a woman saved.
I know. Seriously.
Like how often that does that happen?
That is one of the things that, yes, I'm literally was planning on touching on that because I think it's insane, especially hearing about last week,
Hypatia,
and how we lost all of her work.
Yeah.
And it's crazy too. I'm about to talk about that too with her music.
Yeah.
Like her music is literally, it's recorded, it's written and like transcribed. And like, you can literally listen to her on Spotify. Like, she has a Spotify artist page.
Just shows how much people respected her, like
exactly,
which makes me think just how legit she was, because for a woman to get that kind of respect and like protection, she would have had to be so like
above and beyond, above kind of. Yeah, I wonder if, I mean, it doesn't necessarily like seem like it from her chart maybe, except for like her Aquarius moon Like, she doesn't seem like she has super masculine energy, though, too, to me.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think. I don't ascribe, like, Virgo to...
Virgo is the Virgin. Very feminine.
And also, that was the connection. I forgot to say this earlier, but that was the connection that I didn't know, that I thought you were going to make and you didn't.
The Virgo. The Virgin.
All the Virgo, yeah, and being concerned about health and religion.
Interesting.
And yes, the Virgin also.
Yeah.
It's like the symbol.
Yeah, because Virgo is all about like kind of our moral compass.
Yeah.
It's like all of the things we feel from the spiritual side of Pisces gets like turned into a system of rules in Virgo, and it's our own personal morality. So when somebody has heavy Virgo placements, they usually have a really strong moral compass that's like really structured.
Yeah. She didn't really have a choice. Like,
but that's also funny. Yeah, right. But that's also funny that she was literally a virgin.
Yeah.
And she had all the Virgo.
That's what we think. I'm about to tell you something that makes me think potentially otherwise. Obviously, there's no...
You know, I hope she wasn't. I hope she got her... Listen. You know, it doesn't matter either way. People can do whatever they want with their bodies, but...
Absolutely.
Based on her Scorpio Mars, I hope that she had her fun.
Listen to this. I think that she might have because I'm like, girl, how would you have known this? Okay, so she... This is one last little fun fact.
I just had a really crazy vision.
Listen. This is one little last fun fact before we move on to talking about her music. But she also has one of the earliest recorded, if not the first, written description of the female orgasm in her writings. And I'm not sure which one. I would assume Physica. That's like one of her treatises, which is about like the body and everything. And I'm about to read it to you. Shit. So trigger warning. Listening to this with your children or something. Maybe
it's about pause to get and come steamy. Back.
Just a little bit. And which is also, I'm like cracking up at you saying dirty talk. Because I was like, literally, yeah.
That's really funny.
But, just in general, she had a very positive view about sexuality and female pleasure. Talk about way, 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 way ahead of her time. So here's this quote. I wanted to summarize it, but her take on this is just so fascinating. And yeah, and also I'm like, girl, how do you know this? How would you even come up with this you've never had sex? Like, listen.
She definitely...
Well, Virgin Mary didn't tell you that in your vision.
She may have.
Oh, very true.
Virgin Mary. Oh, not Virgin Mary, though. I was thinking Mary Magdalene.
Of course you were thinking Mary Magdalene.
Mary Magdalene.
If you don't know, we don't have Mary Magdalene with us today. If you don't know, Jenna is obsessed with, why would you know? But Jenna's
obviously
obsessed with Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, I have a recently found connection with Mary and I love her so much.
Yes. And last week we had her little shrine on our pillar with us, but she's not with us today. Oops. Do we need to go grab her?
She is with us.
Do we need to? Okay.
It's okay. All right. She's always with us.
True.
But no, okay. She also could have just been experimenting with herself.
That's
like
true,
she didn't necessarily need another person.
You're right.
And she's a Scorpio Mars. So like she definitely had the desire, but
yeah,
that doesn't necessarily mean another person. And I'm
you're right.
Nuns, I guess, is it like technically, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to masturbate either. Like I know monks or like Christian, like men are not supposed to.
Surely not.
So.
And I think just doing that in general in that time in a very Christian.
Yeah.
Religious.
But part of me is like, would they even address it? Or would it just be one of those things that they just kind of like don't talk about, like whatever happens behind closed doors, like we don't think about it, we don't talk about it.
Now I want to know if she talked about that in any of her.
Yeah.
I feel like she totally would. Anyway. Yeah.
Hey, if you know anything about nuns and masturbation.
If you know any nuns who masturbate.
Please, let us
email
know.
Email us at covenpod333@gmail.com. Okay, here's this quote. This is what she believes about the female orgasm. Here we go. And yeah. Anyway, here we go. When a woman is making love with a man, a sense of heat in her brain, which brings with it sensual delight, communicates the taste of that delight during the act and summons forth the emission of the man's seed. And when the seed has fallen into its place, that vehement heat descending from her brain draws the seed to itself and holds it. And soon the woman's sexual organs contract and all the parts that are ready to open up during the time of menstruation now close in the same way as a strong man can hold something enclosed in his fist.
Okay, so she's describing with a man.
Yes.
So, yeah, you're right.
But she's saying that orgasm is necessary or aids in conception, yeah, essentially.
Which is a hot take. Which is
not something that anyone else was saying at the time at all.
Is that something people are saying now? Is that a thing?
I have no idea, actually.
That's a really interesting thought, though. Like, clearly it's not necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's really interesting. I wonder if that
does... And it was also just never thought to be necessary, obviously, because no one gave a fuck about female pleasure until...
Yeah.
Very recently, pretty much.
I mean, and that's...
Except for Hildegard. She said, it is necessary. If you want to have a child, if you want to get pregnant, you have to have an orgasm. Sure.
Yeah.
You have to have that heat in your brain, she said.
That is so interesting.
But I'm like, heat in your brain, girl? How do you know what that feels like? That's what I'm saying. But, and she also had, like, ideas about, like, the more love and passion the parents have when conceiving a child, that affects the temperament and the attitude of the child. So if you have, like, a loveless and passionless sex life with your partner, she said, like, you'll have a bitter daughter, essentially.
Ew. I'm thinking of my
parents. No. Don't go there.
Oh my god. No, because I'm like such a, like,
you're like, I'm such
and
a
the fact that I was always told that I was not an accident, but I came sooner than planned. I'm like, oh no. That is going to make me look at people in a whole new way.
You're welcome.
But it makes sense. That is really interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, on to her music. On to less scandalous things. Earlier, I mentioned that she has a Spotify page. She has an artist page on Spotify. You can still listen to her music, and it is her music because it was recorded because, here's some historical context for that. Staff notation, which is the way that we record, this is the way that we record music in, like, on sheet music.
Yeah, how you write music.
That was invented about 100 years before she was born. So that was around.
Yeah.
However, most recorded music was anonymous, so it wasn't attributed to a specific person.
Yeah.
Like, there was no credit for whoever wrote the music. Yeah. Or where it came from.
It just, like, belonged to the church.
Yeah. And just in general, like, not even just church music, but outside of that, like, regular music, too.
Yeah.
Like, being a composer was, like, wouldn't be, like, an actual profession or, like, a specific art form necessarily for, like...
Right.
In that way where people would want to take credit
for it. Where it's, like, about the artist.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I do think it also hundreds of years had to do with... Because... I'm pretty sure the only music at the time was through the church.
I'm sure they had, like,
no,
folk music
I'm pretty
and stuff.
Sure. I mean, yeah, fact check me here. But I'm pretty sure up to a certain point.
Like tavern music.
Up to a certain point, though, the official, like, written music was only the church. And that's why this is from my music history classes,
oh,
from what I can
music.
Remember. Yeah. Okay. So they definitely had, like,
sense.
Folk songs that were passed down.
Yeah.
But
the
only recorded music was just church music.
That makes sense.
And because it was owned by the church, they didn't want to give
about
anybody.
The person.
Yeah.
Yeah. That totally makes sense. But yeah.
But
let
she
us know
took
if we're
ownership
wrong.
Of hers.
Yeah. She was, yeah. She said by Saint Hildegard or not Saint. She wasn't Saint.
As
yet.
She should.
By Hildegard of Bingen.
There's she that said, Capricorn fifth house north
exactly.
node.
Yes, that's what you said. Yes. You said something about that when we were talking about her birth chart, and I was like, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, beep, 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 beep.
And 10th house Gemini, honestly. Yeah, she has a lot of, like, writer stuff in her chart, too.
Yeah.
Just, like, having
patron
such a strong
of writers and musicians.
Mercury placement, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to touch on this later when I wrap up, so I'm not going to say that now. Take that out. Anyway. You should listen to her music on Spotify.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to.
That's what I was listening to when I was researching her.
Oh,
I just
shit.
Like had it on. And
oh,
it's
shit.
Like so beautiful and just like transports you. It's like one of them specifically, it's like the very first one. Actually, I'm going to read the lyrics from one of them just so you have like a sense of her writing.
Oh, they're
too.
Vocal?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
Vocal and there's some just instrumental too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, they're all, like, church, or not, yeah, church hymns.
Right.
Has a different connotation, but they're all hymns. So, these are the lyrics to that the one that I was saying, there's like the her top song on Spotify. Yeah. Spiritus Sanctus.
How many monthly listeners does she have?
I don't remember. I think it was something like 11,000 or week. Something. And there were like 2 million plays or what?
Something like that.
2 million listens. Streams. On this. Yeah, streams, whatever, on Spiritus Sanctus. Damn. Okay, here's the words, because it's beautiful, and she's a beautiful writer. In English, obviously. I'm not going to read this in Latin, because what's the point of that? Okay. Holy Spirit, giving life to all life, moving all creatures, root of all things, washing them clean, wiping out their mistakes, healing their wounds. You are our true life, luminous, wonderful, awakening the heart from its ancient sleep.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's so mystical.
Yeah.
It's like, and I love sure, that it's it works spirit. In Christianity, yes. But it's like, that is a very mystic
yeah, definitely. Perspective. It's just, yeah, it's very, it's like just the spirit yeah. of life. Here's how you affect us. Yeah. I think it's just so gorgeous. Anyway.
Yeah.
Here's our tragic twist. Our witchy woman persecuted. We can't.
No.
I know. It's not as bad as Hypatia. It's
too good to be true.
It is not as bad as Hypatia.
I guess it's got to happen.
I know. Yes. Okay. So Hildegard and her whole convent were excommunicated in the last year of her life. Why are you laughing? It's sad. It's the only thing she's known.
I know. I'm just like.
It was taken away from her and you're laughing.
I'm laughing because it's so like. Man, like,
yeah,
like, it's just so, yeah, like, on brand of, yeah. like, men in the Christian church.
Persecuting. And here's why.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Here's why. Oh, wait, before we get to that.
We don't wait. Like that she is having, that she's dreaming, so.
No, it actually wasn't, it actually had nothing to do with her visions. Mm. Like, she is still.
Was it because she had sex?
No. No. Surprisingly, no. Okay. She was excommunicated because she permitted the burial of a man at her abbey who himself was excommunicated from the church for, quote, involvement in revolutionary activity, whatever that means.
And, okay, slay of him.
But she believed he had made peace with God because he had his, like, last rites performed or whatever before he died. And she believed him to be forgiven for his sins. So that's why she allowed him to be buried at her
okay,
abbey.
Okay, this is my conspiracy theory.
Okay.
That was her guy. That was her man. That's where she learned what an orgasm was. This man. And she was like, no, like, he's, like, good because he, like, had his last rites. So yeah. I think he's good.
So he should be good. And I don't want him to part from me.
Yeah.
But this is where I think this is giving me Scorpio Mars vibes because the way that she handles this is like, yeah, anyway, I hope you'll agree. We'll see. So when, like the bishop or whoever, again, I don't care about the men in this story, except for this guy. But the other church authorities, whatever, they were not present, so they didn't know that she allowed for this to happen. But I guess word got to them somehow, and they were not pleased with this, and were planning, or they were on his way, and they were on their way to exhume his body and, like, kick him out of the abbey graveyard. But before they could arrive, she blessed the man's grave and removed the markers so they couldn't find where he was buried.
Oh, and yeah, she was in love with him.
Yeah. And also, I just think that's like, that just feels like a, this is why it's giving me Scorpio Mars, like, just like a dark, sneaky way.
Yeah, totally.
Of resolving this conflict.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, moving past
yeah,
the conflict.
Yeah, and very, so. Like, determined to do things her way.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Mars is also ruled by Scorpio, so it's like very like determined and focused.
Yeah.
Anything that she wants.
Yeah. She's like, you're not taking this man's body. Yeah. You're not gonna, he's fine. He's good.
Yeah. She was in love.
Yeah.
That's not a historic thing. That is not. Just yes. to clear again, that up. That's just my personal opinion.
We haven't said that this episode yet, but we are not experts. by any means, except for her on astrology. Outside of that, we're not historians. Go listen to a history podcast if that's what you want.
Yeah, historians, journalists, psychologists, but we will probably talk about all of these things.
Yeah.
Theologists.
As people who just love to talk about cool people.
That made her whole, said it, coven.
True.
That made her whole convent be excommunicated?
I guess because they were all involved in with it in some way. So yeah, they were all excommunicated. I guess maybe because they had her
back. They had her back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she was so beloved by and like trusted. She was a huge like authority in the church. So I feel like they totally would have had her nuns would have had her back for sure. But so yes, they were excommunicated. They were not allowed to take part in mass and they were not allowed to take communion, and they were forbidden to use music in their religious practices and forbidden to sing.
Oh, my God.
So it's like, to me, that says, like they knew they couldn't take away her visions and her connection to the divine in that way. But they're like, we can take away your other huge piece of yourself that you use to connect with the divine.
Poor and so, Hildegard.
I know. And this is in the last year of her life. But slightly happy twist, maybe a little bit. She appealed to these authorities and she told them that those who prevent people from singing God's praises would themselves end up in the quote place of no music. And I guess that scared the shit out of them.
There's that Scorpio Mars too.
Exactly. She's like, you're all going to hell if you don't let me fucking sing.
She's like, I know because I saw it, even if probably. She didn't. She was like, I know because I saw it. She's and like, I literally and I saw you burning in hell.
There is no music there. So you got to let me have my music.
And they're all terrified of her. Yeah, that's exactly. So funny.
But she sadly died very soonly after. Aww. So, yeah. So they overturned their punishment. They were now not excommunicated. And they were able to, so at least like in the last, however long that was, I don't know how long it was between that being reversed and her passing, but it gives me some hope that like in the last weeks, days, months, whatever of her life, she was able to
have, some
was
sort
allowed
of.
To, whatever, that's annoying, but like allowed to have that connection with the divine again and sing her songs and write her music, hopefully. For the last little bit of her life.
Wow.
Yes.
Good for you, Hildegard.
So that's my story.
Wow.
Here's my little wrap up.
Yeah.
I invited Saint Hildegard to our coven because her message to the world was one of harmony between ourselves as humans, as well as our interconnectedness to, and even dependence on nature and the divine, which I believe ties into her Libra Mercury as well. That just seems like the balance of of all of these things and the connectedness between all of those things. And then being her Mercury, the thing that she's supposed to communicate, the ways, like the energy that she's communicating that from.
Yeah.
I just think that makes sense. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. She's welcome in my coven any day.
Absolutely. She can make us some herbal tea. And
I would love that. Can you imagine? Okay, picture this. So far in our coven, we have Hypatia and Hildegard.
Yeah.
Imagine us sitting in our room, coven meeting. True. Hypatia has a really new, exciting discovery to share with us. And Hildegard is making us her perfect tea for wisdom and learning.
With some beautiful music in the background.
And we're just sitting on the couch enjoying
ready to listen, ready to learn.
Wait, I'm excited to grow this visual.
Yeah, I know. Wait, I love that. That's sweet.
That is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just think that everything that she believes is a very beautiful way to view spirituality from that Christian framework, even though that's like, you know, something that I once held dear and no longer do necessarily
in that way.
Not in that way, but she came to me in a time where that was still what made sense to me and helped me to view it in a way that tapped into these other parts of myself that I now feel like I am able to more fully express. Oh, here at the last second is our co-host, Salem. Come here.
That's also interesting, too, thinking about all the Virgo, because this is something I've, talked about before in my TikTok videos. how Virgo risings are really good healers, obviously for the Virgo Pisces stuff in their chart, but because they're a mutable sign, mutable signs are the signs that are the transitions. They're the transitions between seasons. And so they represent the transitions in our life. So when you have a lot of like mutable energy, it's, you're going to be really good at helping people make transitions. So it was really like, yeah, her Virgo, all of her mutable energy was like slowly introducing a soft transition for you into like this other perspective.
Yeah, definitely. In a way that didn't feel as scary as admitting like, I don't believe in this anymore.
It was a way just for like me to cut off.
Yes,
it was
exactly.
Let me hold your hand and slowly walk.
And be like, here's this other side of this, of what you know.
Yeah.
In a way that's still like, you're not making anybody mad by accepting like that your body is, you know, is important. Honestly, that's something that was a foundational belief that I was not taught is that my body is against me and I need to be fighting against my body at all times. And she,
because they say your body's a temple, but they don't mean it. They don't mean it. They say your body is,
they do not mean it.
They say your body's a temple, but the way it's taught often is like to be guarded, to never enter, to like keep it totally spotless and walls so high that like, it's just like only, I don't know, but you get my visual. I feel like the way it's actually a temple is like to be nurtured and to be like an altar and your personal connection with the divine. It's your personal temple for you alone.
I love that. And I feel like Hildegard totally
embodies like that.
Yeah, completely. Love her. I also love that she, I mean, I think we just kind of touched on this, but like, she had so many varied interests that seemed to, like I said early, at the beginning of this, to be connected to the collective consciousness. Like that she being that like her views on health and spirituality, even womanhood and sexuality, are so beyond the norm of people that she would have been around. And so that just like, I mean,
so
I love
what
you said about
time.
Like her past, like maybe having past lives that gave her this sort of
insight,
knowledge and and wisdom that she was able to give to people in a very strict, like kind of very black and white, normally very male dominated and controlled by men in that sort of setting. She was able to introduce all of these like really honestly like radical beliefs for and they were accepted and she was loved, and she wasn't excommunicated for saying that women had heat in their brains.
That's wild.
She was not excommunicated for saying that like female pleasure is important. Like that had nothing to do with it, nothing at
I
all.
Do feel like it is a common theme again with all the people that I've researched, just being ahead of their time. So maybe that's something with like the witchy
definitely
kind of persona, is being so incredibly ahead of your time, just like it's like not, doesn't quite fit with the time that you're in, but it was just very
because
progressive.
I think that we'll find that they have these like progressive views because they're tapped into something that
something
is just
greater,
so outside of the realm of what a lot of other people are on, maybe like on a lower vibration, or people who, you know, there's a few ways to look at that. I think like people who are on
just
a lower vibration,
really tied to the earth in that time.
And aren't able to see outside of like their own environment and their own like society's rules and stuff. They're not expanding. That's not their journey yet. Maybe they haven't hit that.
It's a different lesson for them. Very interesting. And this also
stand out.
It's
the ones that
this ties in really well to the person I'm doing next week. Very similar. I'm loving the progression so far of like how it's naturally kind of shifted. I'm excited tell you about my next person.
I'm excited too. So that is why I've welcomed Saint Hildegard of Bingen into our coven.
Yay.